Have you ever marveled at the depth and color of enamel jewelry? Or has your attention ever been caught from across the room by a piece of wall art, and then when you moved in to take a closer look, were you surprised to see the painting was actually done in glass? This episode will explore a form of art near and dear to my heart, fired vitreous enamels. If you think that playing with fire is your idea of fun, this episode is for you. Podcast by Galleries Choice, and I'm your host, Rose Jarecki. Welcome to episode number 5 of the Art for Life podcast by Galleries Choice. In today's podcast, we'll explore the many facets of glass enameling. You'll understand what enamels are and are not, and you will come to know the different techniques that can be used by artists when working with glass enamels. We will discuss the best way to get started with enameling and outline the basic process and tools required. But to understand enameling, we first must understand glass. Glass is a non-crystalline, usually transparent, amorphous solid. Holy heck! We threw all of you in the deep end already. Rose, what are you saying? Okay. Put another way, glass is a very interesting material in that, while it is solid, say at room temperature, it continues to move. This fact has been the topic of study and intrigue by esteemed physicist and Nobel laureate Philip Warren Anderson. Anderson, regarded as the most creative physicist in the world, has made significant contributions to the sciences, most notably symmetry breaking and particle physics, leading to the standard model, and to the philosophy of science through his writings on emergent phenomena. And in case you're not quite up on your readings for emergent phenomena theory, so in philosophy, systems theory, science, and art, emergence occurs when an entity is observed to have properties that its parts don't have on its own. So these properties or behaviors emerge only when the parts interact on a wider whole. Say an emotional response from a viewer and a piece of art. Or how about when you're riding a bicycle? You can turn the bike wheel, but you can't move forward unless the bike's under you. So neither one of you have those behaviors on your own. Emergence plays a central role in the theories of complex systems, such as life itself. It could be said that biological life is an emergent property of chemistry, and psychological phenomena emerge from the neurobiological phenomena of living things. So I started to say before I lost you, Anderson is a smart guy, and even he is perplexed by the properties of glass, leaving us with one of the most profound unanswered questions in physics to this day. He writes, "The deepest and most interesting unsolved problem in solid-state theory is probably the theory of the nature of glass and the glass transition." So to understand what he's talking about a little bit better, we have to understand what vitrification is. Vitrification is the transformation of a substance into a glass-like substance. In ceramics, vitrification is responsible for the impermeability to water that one experiences when you fire the clay base to a high enough temperature. High-fire porcelain is a really good example.
Hey kids, Mr. Bill here. I was a busy bee out in the studio today cutting glass, and when I came back in to grab some lunch, I noticed how damaged my knuckles are. As glass artists, we're in water all the time. Add the occasional scrapes in the cold winter weather, and my knuckles have been through the meat grinder. What's a guy to do? I reach for our own GC Lavender Body Butter. It's soothing and healing. GC Lavender Body Butter is beeswax-based, giving your hands a coat of protection while it heals, and it will stay where you put it. It also contains vitamin E for healing, shea butter for softness, and that great lavender scent. As with all of our lavender goodies, we grow our own lavender here on the farm in North Central Illinois, and we make our own products. GC Lavender Body Butter is great for knuckles, heels, elbows, and knees. I've also heard it's great for runners to avoid chafing in those tender areas. Pick up a tin at our Downers Grove Gallery or online at gclavender.com.
So now that we've got that terminology under our belts, we can look at virtuous enamel, referring to glass powder plus a colorant that is applied to a surface and fired at temperatures between 1380 and 1500 degrees Fahrenheit so that the material is transformed into a glass-like coating. So what this is properties of glass. Glass enamels, not paint. So simply put, enamel is not paint. Easily confused with enamel paints of the day, they're just named because they mean glossy surface sheen, but not having any other characteristics of real virtuous enamel. The confusion even becomes greater when popular brands market materials such as glass enamel paints for decorating glass. Ugh. Hey, Martha, your paints are great for wine glasses and stuff, but you'll never be all in there. The paints are oil or alkyde resin-based products, which are developed to adhere to the substrate, but not ever to be fired to become permanent to the substrate. Today's podcast is brought to you by Gallery's Choice. Gallery's Choice is a family-friendly art and gift gallery with a hands-on art focus, providing classes for all ages. Located in sunny Downers Grove, right along the Burlington Northern Railroad tracks, Gallery's Choice has been a mainstay in the Downers Grove landscape for more than 15 years. Featuring custom art glass stylings and the original designs of artists Rose and Bill Jarecki, it is home to more than 75 local area artists. Join us for an art experience in stained glass, fused glass, mosaics, fine art, drawing, painting, and oils, watercolor, and acrylics, and jewelry and metalsmithing. Find us at galleriechoice.com. Examples of enamels actually come from Egypt, where powders were applied and fired to pottery, stone objects, and some jewelry. Following on into the Roman period, enamel was used to decorate vessels, where metalwork designs featured applications of enamel powders made by mixing colorless glass powder with other materials and metal oxides to produce pigments. These designs were either hand-painted over some outlines or free-handed, and the pieces carefully fired to temperatures hot enough to melt the applied powder, but not so hot as it would melt the metalwork. Now, Byzantine enameling in the Middle Ages reflected some of the more intricate and interesting works in Europe, and one of the styles, cloisonné, emerged. Meaning literally cells of color, cloisonné enamel techniques utilized layers of transparent enamels within cells of line art designs, or cloison. The wires typically made of precious metal, either gold or fine silver, produce the delicate framework for the art. Each layer of work is fired until the height of the enamel is even with the height of the wire. With its high attention for image detail, this technique continues to capture the imagination of enamel artists to this day, including the person who's doing this podcast. Also notable from this period were Limoges enamel work from France. Using a technique known as champlevé, impressions were incised out of the metal, leaving troughs or low spots, which then served to capture the enamel powder. This was easier and cheaper to produce, and as such was practiced widely around the world. During this same period in 16th century France, a technique known as grisaille was developed and used a series of ultra-fine white and dark enamels to create a painting medium where the artist focused on building multiple hand-painted layers to create imagery with subtle shades of gray. These subtle shades of gray were brought upon by multiple firings, which caused the applied layers to become more and more translucent. The results? A monochromatic work with superb shading and detail representing three-dimensional forms. Just awesome. Now, I am still aware that we are talking about visual things in an audio world, so I hope you will indulge me as I refer you back to my website and through my show notes, the links, so that I can share with you some examples of these techniques. Now, the good news is you do not need to be a Nobel laureate to learn how to make enamels. And we have several great classes at Gallery's Choice in torch-fired enamels, 3D enameling projects, metalsmithing for the Champlevé work, and my favorite, our Cloisonné intensive workshop that's coming up this spring. So try our torch-fired enamel class and we can explore using basic inexpensive torch setup and copper bases to learn the process of enameling with opaque enamels. As one great enamelist wrote, "I can teach you in an afternoon how to enamel, and you can spend the rest of your life exploring enamels." So tonight's recipe is for the love of leafies, enamels and escarole, an easy way to incorporate greens in a diet and a great weeknight dinner. It's very, very quick to make. Featuring escarole, which is a leafy that is rich in vitamin A, C, K, and fiber. So today's featured recipe is love of leafy soup. Now, have you ever thought of putting leafy greens into a soup? I never did, but this one is what made me a believer. This recipe starts out real easy by heating 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil with 4 cloves of minced garlic and about 1/8 teaspoon of red pepper, cayenne pepper flakes, or ground, whatever you have, and a dash of cumin for a minute or two just until aromatic. Do not brown the garlic. You'll make it bitter. Just heat it and stir until you start to smell some spicy goodness. Next, you're going to add 8 cups of vegetable broth, preferably some you made from scratch just for this. Oh, get real, people. Just grab your favorite brand and dump it in here. I mean, just watch the sodium. Any good vegetable broth will do. Bring this all to a boil. Meanwhile, weigh out 4 to 6 ounces of escarole and about 4 to 6 ounces of Swiss chard. Or if you don't have Swiss chard, try some spinach. And yes, I use a kitchen scale. My goodness, one of my most favorite get it right in the kitchen tools. Get yourself a small kitchen scale to measure ounces. So you've got about 10 ounces of leafy greens in total. Now wash those greens. Wash them each leaf under warm running water. So after these are well washed, pat them dry and then trim off any excess woody stems. Chop into 1-inch pieces. Cross chop these so you don't wind up with any long stringy pieces that are hard to chew in your soup. That'd be bad. Now that your broth is boiling, add pasta, about 4 ounces of mini farfalle. And 4 ounces, I said, not the whole box. That's my biggest mistake. I dump in too much pasta. And cook this until tender, about 7 to 10 minutes. Once the pasta is tender, add the greens, and you're just going to cook them until they're wilted, maybe about 3 more minutes. Add a squeeze of lemon juice and serve with a dusting of Parmesan cheese. That's it. So quick. So easy, so fresh. Make sure you hop out on our blog to get the recipes we've compiled for you. The links are in our show notes. Hopefully you enjoyed this week's Art for Life podcast. Please subscribe to our website so you don't miss any of the other useful resources we've compiled for you. It's been a pleasure to serve. Enjoy.